Welcome to Beyond the Paradigm. I'm your host, Paul. If you're a new listener to this show, so this is the first time that you've listened, this episode will probably blow your mind, and it will probably blow the mind of my regular listeners also. On this podcast, I look at all kinds of topics which are considered fringe topics, and I seek to show people that world history is far stranger than what we can imagine and what we have been taught by the mainstream. Not everything you see is real, and just because you can't see something, it doesn't mean that it isn't real. In fact, the unseen world is more real than the world in which we see. If you're a regular listener and you would want to support this show, the first thing that you could do and the easiest thing is simply to follow the show and leave a 5-star rating. It helps the algorithms and enables this show to be more visible when people are searching for things to listen to. Or you could take that next step and become a patron of the show for £3 a month. You'll get a shout out on the air. You'll acquire voting rights to vote on topics and which you want on the show. And you can do that at patreon.com/beyondtheparadigm. Or if you can't afford a regular monthly donation, you can simply make a one-off donation by buying me a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/beyondthep5. All links will be put in the show description. Now, today I have a guest with me who has a lot of experience in dealing with people involved in satanic ritual abuse. Dave Bryan is the pastor of Glad Tidings Church in California. And I promise you what Dave has to say will shock you. I've just got two disclaimers for this episode. The first is that this isn't an episode for children. There's going to be things that you hear that I would advise that children don't listen to it. So if you're playing it out aloud, my advice is that take the children out of the room. The second disclaimer is this. You will hear Dave mention a particular known evangelist called Benny Hinn in this episode. The disclaimer is this. I don't subscribe to Benny Hinn's teachings, and I don't encourage people to listen to Benny Hinn, but you will hear Dave mention a prophecy that was made. Now, what I would say to Christians is this: God can use anybody. He can speak through anybody. As we know, he used a donkey in the Old Testament to speak to Balaam. So I'm not saying that what's being said is untrue. What I'm just saying is that I don't subscribe to Benny Hinn's teachings, and I wouldn't encourage people to listen to him at all. So with that said, it's time to bring Dave onto the show.
I've had dreams that weren't just dreams.
We accept the reality of the world with which we're presented. It's as simple as that.
Billions of people just living out their lives, oblivious.
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
I guess nothing was what it seemed to be, huh?
I want to live a real life. I don't want to dream any longer.
Welcome to the show, Dave.
Well, thank you. It's good to be here with you.
Yeah. I listened to your interview on Blurry Creatures podcast, Dave, and I thought I've definitely got to speak to you. But for my audience who sort of don't know who you are, who possibly haven't heard that interview, could you just give us a little bit about what you do on a day-to-day basis, sort of your background?
Sure. Well, I'm a country boy. I grew up on a ranch in Idaho. And I went to Bible college for 4 years and just became involved in helping churches. My wife and I are pastoring the Church of Glad Tidings in Yuba City, California. And we've been here now for 37 years. And my story is I didn't really feel like I was cut out to be a pastor. But I had a lot of compassion toward people, wanted to help people. And when I say that, I'm not a very religious person. So the bells and smells and incense and nonsense aren't really interesting to me, but helping people is something that my wife and I are both very focused on. So 37 years ago, we started this church, the Church of Glad Tidings. And we did so with the thought that we would just try to emulate the life of Jesus, not be religious about it, but just try to actually do what he did and see how that worked out. So our ministry motto is find a need and meet it, find a hurt and heal it. And we've been doing that for 37 years. And the church has grown from 70 to over 1,000. And we have a number of different outreach churches. And it's a very, very busy place at this point. But we still follow that motto, find a need and meet it, find a hurt and heal it. And trust God to help us do that. So it's actually a very exciting life. And it's led us into all kinds of things. That's how we eventually got involved with the prisons and with the mental health institutes because of urgent needs. And so we try to not say no to people. If we can help them in any way, we just try to help them. So that led us into trying to help a woman years ago that was coming out of the occult. And that's the story that you heard on Blurry Creatures. But the truth is, we help homeless people, teen runaways, single moms, widows, orphans. It goes on and on because there are a lot of needs in today's world.
Absolutely. You mentioned prisons there. I'm actually an ex-prison officer. And one of the things that I noticed when I worked in the prison, because I was a Christian, a lot of the lads would speak to me and they trusted me. And a lot of them were open to conversations, even a lot of the Muslim lads, because we had quite a lot of Muslim guys on the wing. But they actually had more respect for me being a Christian than they did for the officers who were not Christians, because they used to say, well, at least you believe in the creator. And they sort of had a bit of disdain towards the other officers. And right. Some of the more I don't know whether you know a lot about Islam or not, but a lot of people have a misconception that they all want to behead us and all this type of stuff, which is not true. Because a lot of the lads on the wing, they used to say to me, we know you're a true believer and you'll go to heaven. I mean, obviously, I told them they needed to believe in Jesus and everything, but they used to say, we know you're a true believer. So a lot of the more, your average Muslim, that's what they believe. But like you said, I saw a lot of need. And obviously, you know, you've seen the same thing, and your ministry is a fantastic ministry with sounds of it. And obviously, I've brought you on the show today to speak about your adoptive daughter, Deborah Joy. Could you just lead us through the story, Dave? Like I said to you off air, I mean, normally I'm speaking to people who are researching topics and I have my questions and that, but this is like a life experience. So just lead us through it, Dave.
Yeah, I'd love to. So this started for us in 1997. So it's been a while. We'd been pastoring the church for 10 years. And in that 10 years, we had reached out into the juvenile halls and into the local jails and also into California state prisons. And so we had become involved in a number of pretty dark situations where people were involved in multiple murders and some Satanism and whatnot. All this was new to me because I grew up on a ranch in Idaho. I had the biblical construct, meaning that I believed in, God and the devil. I believed in angels and demons, but I didn't really have any experience in it. And frankly, could not even imagine why anyone would worship the devil for any reason. It was just a mystery to me how that could happen. My first very intense experience, and it relates to this story of Deborah Joyce, so I'll bring it up. We were doing juvenile hall ministries, and I went to juvenile hall one week to visit the kids, and they had a young lady that was not in the cells. She was sequestered in a plexiglass cage, and it was setting up front as you walked in. It wasn't in general population. And to see this young lady in this cage was surprising to me. So I asked the correction officers, I asked, why do you have that girl in a cage? And they were rather coy. And they said, well, would you like to interview her? I said, sure. So they let me in and locked the door behind me. It was about a 12 by 12 plexiglass cage. And there was just a table in the middle of it. And I pulled up to a chair just across from this girl. She was 14 years old. And I said, hello, sweetheart. And she just immediately, she said, I'm not your sweetheart. And I thought, wow, she's mean. And I said, well, it was just a term of endearment. And she said, well, I don't need those kind of terms. I said, okay, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to offend you. I introduced myself. I said, my name's Dave Bryan. I'm a pastor. And I just wanted to introduce myself, see why you were in here. She said, I tried to murder my mother. And that's a shocking lead statement for a 14-year-old girl. And so I said, oh, I'm so sorry. I said, why did you hate your mother? She said, I didn't hate her. And I said, well, why would you try to murder her if you didn't hate her? She said, to get her power. She had a lot of demonic power, and I was in her coven, and she wanted out of the coven, and I wanted more power. So I did a Judas ritual to betray her and to murder her. And if you do it right, you get the demonic power of the person that you betrayed. So that was news to me. I'd never heard anything like that. And I said, so you killed her? She said, no, I tried to kill her. I thought she was dead. She said, I beat her to death with a baseball bat and threw her body in the river. And she said, I don't know how she survived, but she survived, and they traced it back to me. And so now I'm in juvenile hall for, I think she said 16 years. So anyway, I was shocked by all that, and I didn't really know what to say to her. And so I just said, well, I'm sorry about your circumstances. If you need anything, let me know. So she hunkered down so that the camera couldn't read her lips. And she whispered to me, I need blood. And I was completely confused by that. So I thought to myself, she probably thought I said I was a doctor instead of a pastor. And I said, well, I said, I'm not a doctor. She said, I'm not anemic. And I said, well, why would you need blood? She said, I'm addicted. And I understand adrenochrome and a lot of things that go along with it these days, extremely addictive, but I didn't at the time. And I had no idea what she was talking about. So I said, you're addicted to drugs? She said, well, that too, but I'm addicted to blood. And I said, I don't understand what do you do with the blood? She said, I drink it. And it shocked me. And so I said, you drink blood? And she said, yeah, I'm a vampire. She said, that's why they have me in this cage. Well, at that point, I wanted out of the cage. So I was knocking on the the wall, like, let me out. And the guards, they thought it was very funny. They let me out. And I said, has she actually been attacking other kids in the home? And they said, well, yeah, that's why we can't keep her in general population, is she's a vampire. So that was the first experience I had at a level of evil that, you know, it's a Hollywood horror movie level of evil. And it shocked me. It shocked me to the point that I didn't even stay for the rest of the night with the kids. I just went home and I told my wife about the experience. And she said, oh, poor thing. I thought she was talking to me. I got thrown in a cage with a vampire. But she was actually talking about the girl. And I said, Cheryl, I'm the guy that was in the cage with the vampire. She said, yeah, but she's 14 years old. She's addicted to human blood. She tried to murder her mother to get satanic power. And my wife, just very compassionate person, she felt bad for her. Excuse me. So that was the first experience of really dark evil. And you'll see in a minute how that ties to the story of Deborah Choi. But shortly thereafter, a missionary from Borneo named Jack Sisler. He's a man that has a biography written about him, and it's called Jack Sisler, Man After God's Own Heart. It's a Christian missionary classic. And I had known him as a boy. I had known him as the person who had all kinds of stories about supernatural things from New Guinea and, you know, the Solomon Islands. And but he called me and he said, David, I knew your father. I know you're pastoring. And I was praying and God told me to go buy a book, write a message in it for you and bring it to you. So I'll see you this Sunday. And I was kind of flabbergasted. I said, oh, okay. So he came and he brought a book that is called He Came to Set the Captives Free. And it's a very dark book. I say that because even though it was written to introduce the power of Christ over evil, it goes through what are called the rituals of defilement, that they were given to Aleister Crowley, he says, by Satan, in order to defile a human being so completely that there was no chance of redemption. And so that goes into Satanism and what they refer to the moon child, the coming Antichrist, and some woman that is so evil that she qualifies to bear the seed of Satan, the man of sin or the Antichrist. So it's pretty dark stuff. I was not the kind of guy that was interested at all in that sort of thing. And so now this prophet is handing me this book, and it has on the front of it, it has a druid priest that's on a suspended pentagram over the flames of hell, and an angel hand is coming out of the heavens to break the chains off this druid priest. And the whole book cover was just like, really? You actually think I'm going to read that? So I said, looks pretty weird, Jack. And he said, well, the world is much weirder than you've ever imagined. And I said, okay. I said, so you want me to read this book? He said, I don't want you to. God wants you to. It's different. He said, I don't really care. But God told me to buy that book, give it to you. He said, go ahead and open it up and read what I wrote in there. And so it says in there, dear Dave and Cheryl, our true friends, which we love, may this true story help equip you to take your rightful place in the front line of spiritual warfare. Love, Jack. Well, I didn't really know much about spiritual warfare. I knew it was a term, I figured it had to do with fighting against demons somehow, but I didn't really understand much about spiritual warfare. So I said, well, thank you, Jack. And he said, well, you probably shouldn't thank me until you understand what that means. But anyway, it's God's will for you. And so you need to read that book. If you have any questions, let me know. Well, he went back to doing missions in different nations. He was in South America and the islands, Solomon Islands, and in Chile and different places. But I didn't read the book. I looked at it. I thought it's too dark. It's talking about satanic rituals that I don't want to know about. Even if they're true, I don't want to know about them. So I put the book away. And 2 years later, he called and said, David, have you read the book? And I gave him, you know, an excuse. I didn't really want to peel that banana, so to speak. So I said, well, Jack, you know, it's a big church. I'm pretty busy. And he said, so you're just ignoring the message that God gave you. I said, well, I'm not really ignoring it, Jack. I'm just telling you I've been busy. He said, it's been 2 years. He said, read the book, David. So that happened again 2 years after that. Now it'd been 4 years. And it happened again 2 years after that. The third time that he called, which now it was 2 year intervals. So now it's been 6 years since he gave me the book. And he dated the book, you know. So the third time he called, I was just again telling how busy I am. And he said, David, you realize that it's obvious to me that you're not being honest. I said, I am being honest. I'm very busy. He said, I know you're busy, but if you would have read one word a week, you'd have been finished by now. It's been 6 years. And so he said, I know you're busy, but you're avoiding reading the book. And I said, well, yeah, I am. I don't want to read the book because I've read parts of it, and it's about blood and gore and violence and rape rituals. And I don't want to know about that kind of stuff. Sacrificing children. I don't want to know about that kind of stuff. He said, well, David, you know what a prophet is, right? I said, yeah. He said, well, I'm a prophet. I think you know that. And I was minding my own business 6 years ago. He said, I certainly wasn't thinking about you. And God told me to reach out to you and to give you that book and to write a message from him in it. And you have ignored that for 6 years. So I said, well, Jack, why would God want me to read that mess? And he said, I don't know. I'm not God. I do know that I'm a prophet, and I heard God tell me to get you that book. And he said, I've never bought that book for anyone else in my entire life, so you need to read it. So I tried to read it again, and I made a little progress in it, but it was just too dark, and I finally tapped out again, put it back on the shelf. So the next time I heard from Jack was 2 years later. Now it had been 8 years. And this time he called and he said, David, this is Jack. He said, I don't need to ask you if you read the book because God told me that you haven't. He said, you're about to be face to face with the devil. You've had 8 years to prepare for it, and you're unprepared because you're stubborn and disobedient. God gave you 8 years, and you have neglected 8 years that could have been used to prepare yourself. So he said, I'll see you Sunday. And I knew he was calling me from Chile. So I tried to get out of it. I said, oh, Jack, you're in Chile. I see you don't need to come. He said, David, I don't take my instructions from you. I take them from God, and I will see you on Sunday. So here he came, and boy, did he give me a hard time. And the church was about 1,500 people at the time. And we've shrunk down to fighting weight at this point, but it was 1,600 people at the time. And I was still fairly young, and I felt good about having built a church that size. And boy, did Jack take me to task. He said, you think God is impressed with a church of 1,600? He said, God's impressed with obedience. Obedience is better than sacrifice. And, you know, I knew all the Bible verses. And he said, you've been disobedient for 8 years. And so I asked, I said, you said I'm about to be face to face with the devil. Is there any way to avoid that? And he said, no, there isn't. He said, read the book of Jonah going to Nineveh. Well, we all know the story. He tried to avoid it, and eventually he went the hard way, right? So I said, I don't need to read the book of Jonah. I know what it's about. He said, well, God has a plan for you. And I said, I don't understand that, Jack. I don't want to be involved in this plan. And why would God make me do that? And he said, because he created you, and he knows exactly why he created you and what he created you for. And you will never be totally fulfilled until you're doing what God created you for. So I didn't understand that. Jack didn't understand that, but he was wise enough to understand the principle behind it. So he said, son, you need to repent of being so self-assured and so cocky. You need to ask God to forgive you for being disobedient and for dishonoring the voice of a prophet, and ask God to forgive you and ask him for mercy, because you're about to be face to face with the devil. So he'd been speaking to me about this every 2 years. So I thought, well, maybe I have 2 years left. So I asked him, I said, do I have 2 years left? He said, oh, heavens, no. I flew here from Chile. I said, 2 months? He says, no. I said, 2 weeks? He said, no, you have 1 week. 1 week from today, you're going to be face to face with the devil. So he said, you should repent, fast, and pray. Ask God for his mercy and for his forgiveness, and read that book. So that wasn't real happy news for me. And so I told the church that Cheryl and I were going to take a week and fast and pray. And we told them that the prophet had said we were about to be face to face with the devil. And, you know, it's a big church. I said, we all need to be praying. I don't know what that means. The prophet didn't really know what that exactly would entail, but he wanted me to read this really creepy book about Satanists, and we all just need to pray because I'm not sure what's up. So anyway, we have a good church. A lot of people were praying, and Cheryl and I fasted and prayed that week, and we came back the next week, which was, you know, the day that we were supposed to be face to face with the devil. And we had an incident on Saturday night. We have two services each week that are here in the valley, and then we have a service up in the foothills. But we have a Saturday night service and a Sunday morning service. So that Saturday night, we had an incident with a lady in the church. And at that point, we had never cast out demons. It's obviously a biblical concept. Jesus said, go everywhere, preach the gospel of the kingdom, heal the sick, cast out demons, raise the dead, and I'll be with you always. So anyway, we hadn't done any of those things. We were working on preaching the gospel of the kingdom, but we certainly had never cast out demons. So we had an experience with a lady that night, Saturday night, and it was the first time Cheryl or I had cast a demon out of anyone. It was a lady in the church, and I don't want to get sidetracked on that. But I was happy that night. as we went home because I thought we had been face to face with the devil, and we survived. It wasn't that bad, you know? So I mentioned that to Cheryl, and she said, oh no, that's not what Jack was talking about. I said, no, of course that's what he was talking about. We've never done that before. She said, no, I think that was just a warm up. So I thought, oh Jesus, I hope she's not right about that. But anyway, on Sunday morning, we had our regular service and gave a call for people that needed God's help in their life. And half a dozen people came forward to be prayed for. One of them looked like she had been in a really bad car wreck, and her face was broken up, her skull. It had bolts and apparatus to try to hold the pieces of her jaw together. And she looked pretty rough. And just her whole demeanor, you could tell that she had a very rough life. So when I was praying for him, I noticed she prayed along with me. I'd say a line, they'd say a line, but she never would close her eyes. And I could tell she was very, very apprehensive and fearful. So afterwards, I gave her one of my cards and said, if you ever need anything, give me a call. Nobody needs to live life on their own. Well, the next day she called and she was whispering. She said, please come help me. Witches are trying to kill me. And I said, well, could you speak up? She said, no, I can't speak up. They're looking for me. I'm hiding in the bushes. So anyway, my wife and I drove over to where she said she was. Sure enough, she was hiding in the bushes. She came running out, jumped in the car, asked us to take her away to a safe place. And she didn't have any place to go. So my wife and I moved her into our home. And I was curious about her story that witches were trying to kill her. She said, well, I used to dabble in witchcraft and I'm trying to get out. And I said, that doesn't sound like a likely story, that you just dabbled in witchcraft and now the coven is trying to kill you. That sounds kind of intense to me. She said, well, yeah, it's kind of intense, but anyway, I got into trouble with them. And yeah, I that's the story. I've dabbled in witchcraft and they're after me. So we started out just a mercy ministry to try to help this lady. Moved her into our house. We had three boys at the time. They were, I think, 14, 12, and 10 or 11. But anyway, we didn't know anything about occult level deliverance. We'd only one time even tried deliverance. That was the night before. And so we moved her into our home. And at 2 o'clock that first night, all hell broke loose in our house. Now, at that point, I didn't know what the witching hour was. And we just woke up and her body came tumbling down our stairway. We lived in a Victorian house and she was upstairs and she come just tumbling down the stairs screaming, and we got the lights on and she was batting at this thing that she could obviously see and we couldn't, and we just started rebuking the devil and asking God for mercy. And it probably took about 15 minutes. And all of a sudden she said, oh, thank goodness he's gone. And I said, you could see the spirit? She said, of course, couldn't you? I said, nope. We could just see you batting at something, but I noticed that you were calling it Knack. She said, well, yeah, that's his name. I said, okay, so you saw a spirit that attacked you in the middle of the night and you know its name. She said, yeah. I said, okay, so that doesn't sound like dabbling to me. What kind of spirit did you say it was? She said, it's a murder spirit. And I said, okay, so you know a murder spirit by name and you can recognize it, and it tosses you down the stairs. that doesn't sound like dabbling. She said, well, yeah, I probably got in deeper than I should have, but she was trying to downplay it. Well, every night at 2 o'clock, every night, something bizarre would happen. And we'd be up in the night and we would be rebuking the devil and trying to cast spirits out of her. And it's in a book called The Serpent and the Savior. It tells the story in detail. I don't have time to share all the details, but it was quite an experience for us because, it was just so regular every night and it was so bizarre, and God helped us. And we were of course trying to help her, but, I said, why does this happen at 2 o'clock every night? She said, well, duh, it's the witching hour. And I said, I didn't know there was a witching hour. She said, of course there is. It's from 2 to 3 every night. And that's why in horror movies, you always see the clock strike 2 just before something bizarre happens. And I said, well, I don't watch horror movies, but thanks for the heads up. And so I said, so how does this work? She said, well, the way it works is the coven will meet together and they will conjure spirits and pay them in blood. That's the medium that they pay spirits in the occult world. And it could be anything from, you know, a small animal to a human sacrifice. But anyway, they pay spirits to go out and do their bidding. And depending on what they want done, it will cost them more. So anyway, they do that from midnight to 2. And then from 2 to 3, the spirits that have been paid in blood to do their bidding, they go out to work their woes. So that's why she was being attacked every night at 2 o'clock. So anyway, the long and short of it is we loved this woman. We were trying to help her. We knew that she needed help, but I was concerned that she wasn't being honest with us. And that concern was growing. My wife is an extremely compassionate person. And so she would say, well, you know, let's be patient with her. And I would say, well, I get being patient with her, but if she's not being honest, I don't think we're going to be successful because the truth sets you free. And lies and deception keep you in bondage. So anyway, I had been asked to come do a conference with some other churches earlier, about a year earlier. I was a keynote speaker. And now the time had come for this camp. And now this woman is living in her home. And it's very intense every night. And I tried to get out of the camp. And they said, no, it's too late. We need you to come do this. And so I said, well, I'm going to have to bring a guest and some friends, and we need some cabins on the outskirts of the camp. And, you know, it's very difficult to talk to people about these kind of things. Even Christian people, they don't get it, right? So anyway, we headed for that camp, and we had just gotten into a deliverance the night before we left for the camp. And it was a very powerful manifestation of this evil spirit. And it was the spirit of the Piazza bird. I had never heard of the Piazza bird. And I knew it was a very powerful spirit. And so we fought it most of the night unsuccessfully. And the next morning, we Googled it and found out that it was the power spirit of the Eleni Indian nation, and it's the most powerful spirit in North American black magic. That's why it's on the top of the totem pole, is the Piazza bird, or sometimes it's called the Thunderbird or the Firebird. So I'm thinking to myself, this whole idea that you dabbled in witchcraft. I'm not buying that. There's way too much juju going on here for you to just have dabbled in witchcraft. So we had a very difficult night. We packed up, headed for this camp that was out of state. It was in Oregon. And about every half hour, there was a demonic manifestation. We'd have to pull off the road. We were in a Chevy van, and we'd have to pull off the road and pray for her. And it was getting very tiring. And every time we did that, put us back in time. And so now I was about to be late to be the keynote speaker at this camp. And so I was getting frustrated. And it was in that state of mind that we made our way out of California into Nevada. And on, I saw the signs on the highway that said Winnemucca Indian Nation in 10 miles. And as soon as we got into Nevada, I told the family, and we had Cheryl's sister and brother-in-law with us. They had been helping us in the deliverance. And as soon as we got into Nevada, I said, they don't enforce the speed limits here. We're way behind. We're going to be late to the conference. So I'm going to drive as fast as this van will go and try to make up time. So everybody was sleeping. I was driving about 110 miles an hour in that Chevy van. And I saw the sign that said Winnemucca Indian Nation. And as only the Spirit of God can, I just had a strong impression that there was going to be trouble when we got there. And it was just instantaneously. I thought, we were fighting an Indian spirit and we're going on to Indian reservation. And it was just a God thing. You know, I always say, I know God's speaking to me when I think thoughts that are smarter than I am. So it just happened like that. And I thought there's going to be trouble, but we went on to that Indian reservation doing 110 miles an hour in the Chevy van. And instantly, all the doors came open and the seatbelts came off everybody. It was supernatural. It happened instantaneously. And some power, evil power, tried to throw her out onto the highway doing 110 miles an hour. So she was a little lady. I was able to grab her by the hand and pull her back in and get the van stopped. And everybody was terrified. It was a mess, you know, stuff blowing out the windows. Anyway, I finally got it stopped. As I had pulled her back into the van, she reached under my seat and I had an 9mm high power handgun in there. She came out with that. And now I was trying to get that out of her hand so she wouldn't shoot me with it. And it was really wild. So by the time that was over, I was highly frustrated. And there was a evil spirit that had taken her over and it was speaking through her. And that's very common in occult level deliverance, by the way. So I just said, who are you? The spirit said, I am the power spirit of the Winnemucca Indian Nation. And I said, why did you attack us? He said, because she has been defiled by the blood of a virgin sacrifice and she's marked and I have a right to kill her. And I said, okay, I don't know anything about that. But he almost killed the whole family. He said, well, it's your fault. You're carrying somebody that is marked with the blood of a virgin sacrifice. Well, all this was new information to me. And so I said, well, so let me get this straight. You tried to kill her. You weren't able to. You tried to kill me. You weren't able to. And you're the main evil spirit around here. So all the other evil spirits just saw you try to kill her and fail. And the spirit said, well, I'm not done. I said, well, but you failed. and you failed because we're Christians and we have the Spirit of Christ within us. And so you tried to kill us and it didn't work. And I'm alive and my family's alive. And the lady that we renamed Deborah Joy, she was going by Ramona Jarnigan at the time. I said, Ramona's alive. And so you fail. And so we can do this two ways. I assume all the other evil spirits on this Indian reservation are watching because you're the chief, right? Right. Said, okay, so we can either have a throwdown, in which case it may take us 2 days, but eventually we will cast you out because we have the power of Jesus Christ, the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. And you know that's more powerful than you. He said, I don't think you can do it. And I said, but we might be able to. I think we can. I said, we sure as heck are going to try. And if we beat you right here on your reservation with everybody watching, you're going to be really humiliated. I said, why don't you just leave her alone and we'll get off your reservation and never come back. And I didn't know if that would work or not, but that evil spirit said, okay, but if you ever come back, I have the right to kill her. And I said, okay, deal's the deal. We won't come back. But you have to give us free passage across your reservation. Okay. So suddenly he's gone. And Ramona, she comes back to her senses and said, well, wow, what happened? And I said, we'll talk about it as soon as we get off the Indian reservation. So we headed 100 miles an hour to the other side of the Indian reservation. And as soon as we were off, I stopped the van and asked her to get out. And I was very frustrated. She knew that. She was crying. She said, why are you angry? I said, well, I'm angry because I have a wife and 3 sons, and they almost all died because you're lying to us. She's just crying. Well, what do you mean? I said, well, you were attacked by the power spirit of the Winnemucca Indian Nation, who said you were marked by the blood of a virgin sacrifice and that you knew about it. And she just began to weep. And she said, I didn't want to do it. It was my little sister. It was Delina Starr. My father made me do it. She was just weeping and weeping. And she said, are you going to leave me here? And I said, I haven't decided yet. But I said, here's the deal. We have tried to love you and help you. And we have given you a home in our home with our sons. And you have been lying to us ever since we met you. I said, you lied about dabbling in witchcraft. This is not dabbling in witchcraft. And so I said, if you lie, we can't help you. I'm not going to risk my family's lives for somebody that's lying to us. So if you're sincere about wanting to be free from whatever you're involved in, I want to know exactly who you are and what you've done and why it is that every place we go, they know about you. And she said, if I tell you the truth, do you promise you won't leave me here? And I said, yes, I promise. But I said, I want the whole truth. I don't want any lies. I don't want you hiding anything. We need to know the truth. The truth sets you free. And so she said, okay. She said, I've been lying to you because I thought if you knew who I really was, you wouldn't let me be in your home. But she said, my father was Anton LaVey. He's the Black Pope. He's the high priest of the Church of Satan and the author of the Satanic Bible. And I was shocked because I had heard about Anton LaVey. And I said, that's your father? And she said, yeah. She said, I was conceived in a sex ritual with the Aleni Indians to try to bring the power of the Illini Indians and the power of Crowleyite Satanism together in a power convergence. And I've been groomed to be the bride of Satan, and I don't want to be the bride of Satan. And she said, Anton made me do a ritual that we killed my little sister, cut her heart out. She said I was a little girl. It's really gross, and you know, it's just, but it's unfathomable the things they do. But it involved eating the flesh and drinking the blood of this little baby. And she said, I didn't want to. He made me do it. He has forced me to do evil things my whole life, and I can't take it anymore, and I want out. And he's searching for me to make me come back and do the Bride of Satan ceremony on Halloween. So I said, is there anything else that you've been dishonest about? She said, yeah. She said, I didn't get in a car wreck. I said, okay, why would you lie about that? She said, well, my daughter tried to beat me to death with a bat, and she threw my body in the river, and angels appeared and rescued me. And I said, your daughter tried to beat you to death with a bat, and you lived anyway. She said, yeah. I said, is your daughter a vampire by any chance? And she said, well, yeah, how do you know that? I said, well, I was put in a cage with her in juvenile hall a while back. Of course, having no idea who she was or this woman would come into our home. But I thought, wow, only God can put together a story like this. So she said, yeah, she's in juvenile hall for attempted murder. And she confirmed, she said she did a Judas ritual to try to get my demons. And that's why they're looking for me. That's why I told you the first day I called that witches were looking for me to try to kill me, because I know too much about what's going on, and they failed the first time they're looking for me. So I said, okay, well, so now that we know what's actually going on, you'll be welcome to be a part of our home as long as you continue to be honest. But please don't ever lie. However bad it is, however ugly it is, just be honest about it. And so she said, well, can I change my name? I said, to what? She said, Deborah Joy Bryan. I said, you've been thinking about this, haven't you? She said, yeah, Deborah was the warrior queen of the Old Testament. Joy is the promise that he'll give you beauty for ashes and joy in place of mourning. And Brian is our family name, and that means overcomer. So I said, well, yeah, we'll look into changing your name. She said, I've already looked into it, and you can legally adopt me even though I'm almost your age. And she'd already done all the research, because she had gotten a prophecy from a guy named Benny Hinn. She went, when she was trying to get out of the Church of Satan, she went to this huge Coliseum in Sacramento. And out of thousands of people, this man called her out and said, you've never known what it was like to have a loving father. You've had an evil father who's hurt you deeply. But God is a loving father. And he's chosen a father for you. You'll go to a place called Yuba City, and you'll find a pastor in Yuba City, and he'll take you into his home, and you'll become his daughter, and you'll be a part of his family, and you'll find the love that you've searched for your whole life. So, of course, we didn't know about the prophecy from Benny Hinn. We found out that day by the side of the road who she was and what was going on. And we had a good cry and hugged her. And we went on to the camp and we went back a different way, making sure not to go through the Wittemuck Indian Nation. And from that time on, she was very honest. We learned a ton from her. We had no idea that she had been through 6 of the 7 rituals of defilement that were talked about in that book that the prophet from Borneo said, God says you need to read this book. Amazing story of how God spoke to a prophet and connected with us and helped me, even though I was really hesitant to read the book. I did find out about the rituals of defilement. And now by the side of the road, we find out that Deborah's been through 6 out of the 7, and she's scheduled to go through the 7th and final ritual of defilement on Halloween of 1997. So that was the big moment of disclosure. We all gathered around her, hugged her, kissed her, told her that she was a Brian now, and we'd fight this together. And she said, well, just remember now that he knows who you are and knows that you know him, the Church of Satan will come after you, which they did. That was in May of 1997. May, June, July, August, September, and the month of October was a very, very intense time. The Church of Satan threatening to kill us, threatening to burn the church down. We recorded during that time, it was recorded at night while we were away, but we turned over to the state of California 6 different messages of their intentions to rape and murder and to sacrifice us to Satan, to burn the church down. Lots of those kind of things that are a matter of public record at this point in California. But anyway, we learned a great deal during that time. Again, she changed her name legally to Deborah Joy Bryan. I call her DJ. I love her very, very much. She married one of the men that came through a rehab program in the church, Billy. They're happily married and have been for years, and they live a happy Christian life in another state. But of course, she doesn't want anything to do with the ugliness of her past. So she always calls and I tell her, I'm going to be on this, I'm going to be on that, because the prophecy that she got from Benny Hinn is that God would rescue her and her story would go throughout the world and be an encouragement and a help to many people that were in the prison house of darkness and the occult. So she's very, very happy whenever I do an interview like this, or we do a seminar, which we do often. We call them Isaiah 61 seminars on spiritual warfare and deliverance. But anyway, it's a tremendous story. It culminated on the night that she was supposed to be the bride of Satan. And that was Halloween of 1997. And it culminated in a power play for the Church of Satan. They kidnapped her. It's quite a story. Again, I'd refer you to a book called The Serpent and the Savior, because there's so many details, and probably time-wise, we need to keep moving here. But anyway, it's quite an amazing story of the awesome power of God to intervene to save DJ's life. And of course, her life was saved that night as we called on God to cut the silver cord of Anton LaVey. For your listeners, if they don't know what that means, let me just say that It comes out of King Solomon's, his keys. The keys of Solomon are in-depth grimoires, because Solomon understood the spirit realm. And for many, many years, he was an occult practitioner before he came back to God at the end of the book of Ecclesiastes. But because he understood so much about spiritual things, he, throughout the book of Ecclesiastes, he leaves these little cracker trails, and he'll just mention something that is only known in the occult world, really. For instance, he says, serve God before your silver cord is cut. Well, most of the world has no idea what the silver cord is, but he just kind of throws it out there, like, you know, before you or I would say, serve God before you die. But Solomon in Ecclesiastes says, serve God before your silver cord is cut. And so there's a lot to unpack all in one interview, but let me just say this. On that night, on Halloween night, in order to try to get who he called Ray Ray, and we called DJ or Deborah Joy, but in order to try to get her to the Halloween ritual, to fulfill the seventh of the rituals of defilement, that was his goal. And he had invested his whole life into this happening, from, you know, conceiving her in a sect ritual to years of satanic ritual abuse to these consecutive 7 years of the rituals of defilement. So he had invested a great deal into it and was intent on pulling it off. But anyway, God intervened. And so the scheme that they had concocted was, because Anton LaVey was a master of astral projection and astral travel. He actually had above top secret clearance in the Department of Defense and the Pentagon, the U.S. Pentagon, because he pioneered a astral spying program. And so he was a master at this, and he taught astral projection all over the world. So his plan was to astral project, meaning for his spirit soul to leave his body. When that happens, the body has every appearance of being dead. Any medic would tell you the body was dead. There's no heartbeat, there's no breath, there's no pulse, because the life force has gone out of it. But the difference being, if the silver cord is attached, the spirit soul could go out and travel on the astral plane as a specter, or we would call a ghost, right? A spirit without a body. It's out there. The only thing that makes it different than any other specter or ghost is that it still has the right to go back and inhabit the meat sack or the body, because the silver cord is still attached. If the silver cord is cut, it can never again come back into that body and animate that body. So that's the deal. He was an expert at staging somewhere. He would leave his physical body. He would go and be involved in astral spying for the Department of Defense, or any kind of nefarious deed on the astral plane. But then he would come back into his body and reconnect. And so that was his plan for that evening. Now, we didn't know what his plan was. We were just praying, oh, God, help us. We know that he's going to try something, because for months he had been mocking us and telling us, when Halloween comes, you'll know why I serve the dread Lord of death and hell instead of the pathetic weakling that you serve, referring to Jesus Christ. He would always call him the pathetic weakling, and always called me preacher boy. But anyway, when that night came, he astral projected, went into Deborah Joy, just like the spirit of the Winnemucca Indian Nation, right? It's a spirit going into a body, but But he was doing it from the astral plane. He went into Deborah Joy, took over her sensibilities, talked through her just like the Winnemucca spirit did. And what happened is we were all planning on a prayer meeting that night because we knew Anton would be up to something. We didn't know what. So I had a group of 10 intercessors that were coming over to our house to pray all night. And before they got there, he astral project went into her, did a body jacking. It's like, we call it a body jacking because it's like a carjacking, right? Carjacking. Somebody just tells you to move over and takes over your car. It's not his car, but he takes over. Body jacking, same deal. Just pushes you out of the driver's seat and takes control. And so Anton did that, took over Deborah Joy from her bedroom at our house, called the police department and the fire department and said that she had been kidnapped and held hostage. She had been tortured and raped and abused for months by me. And that she finally got her hands on a phone and she needed to be rescued immediately. Well, that brought everybody out, the police department, fire department, they all converged on our house. They drew their guns on me because they thought I was the perpetrator and they were going to arrest me and take me to jail. And of course, Anton now is in the body talking through Deborah Joy and calling me all kinds of vile things and flipping me off, you saw what's happening, and what do you do? You tell the officers, that's not even her, that's her father who's on the astral plane. They would have taken me to mental health. So I just thought, oh Jesus, please don't let it end this way. And so we had a ministry in our church called Trauma Intervention Program. Remember I told you our motto is find a need and meet it, find a hurt and heal it. So one of our ministries, we always sent people to any 911 calls just to help out. And so an elder in my church happened to hear that there was an incident at my house. And so he come rushing over with the trauma intervention. And there I was about to get arrested. And he intervened because he has a badge and a card and everything, and he can go on police scenes. And God gave him real wisdom. And he intervened and he said, this guy is a well-respected pastor in the area. This woman has a long mental health history. So either she's telling the truth, in which case the pastor needs to go to prison, or she's lying, in which case the pastor will probably sue you if you arrest him tonight on those kind of outlandish charges. And so they didn't even know that Lou worked for me, right? They just thought he's the trauma intervention guy. But they said, oh, wow, we hadn't thought of that. He said, I'd think of that if I were you. Y'all will lose your job if this goes down wrong. So they decided not to arrest me that night, just warned me not to follow her and not to try to intervene. And so so I got off the hook. They took her away. We didn't know where she was going. But anyway, this all culminated just as she was on her way out, Lou dropped a cell phone in her jacket that she didn't notice for the purpose of trying to get a hold of her. So I knew enough about astral projection to know that Anton's body had to be staged somewhere. And I thought it's probably at this motel in an adjacent town. We called it Hell Motel because there was a lot of occult people that hung around there. So I said, well, Cheryl, you and Lou go to Hell Motel, see if you can see her there. I'm going to go up to the Satanic Ranch, because if she ever gets on that ranch, we'll never see her again. They'll sacrifice her to Satan tonight. And so, it's America. We all have guns, So I strapped up and I got all my guns and I was ready to go Old Testament on them. But anyway, as I was headed up the hill, they saw her going into Hell Motel in Marysville. So I turned around, came back, and on my way back, Anton, again, he's in Deborah Joy's body, but he found that phone, and he called and said, very clever, preacher boy. He said, unfortunately for you, it's too late. We have, remember, he called her Ray Ray. We have Ray Ray, and tonight we'll sacrifice her to Satan. But her blood's on your hands, because if you hadn't intervened with my daughter, she wouldn't be sacrificed tonight. She would be the bride of Satan. She'd be highly honored tonight. And then he began to rail on Jesus Christ and blaspheme him and just say perverse, wicked things. And when he did, you know, I always say, I know God's speaking to me when I think thoughts that are smarter than I am, but I've never done this before. I haven't done it since. Hope to never do it again. But I know God told me, cut his silver cord. And I just thought, wow, that's intense. But I knew it was God. I called Cheryl. I said, we're supposed to pray that God would cut his silver cord. I called our head intercessor, who was at our home. That group of 10 that were wondering where we were, because they got there to pray and no one was home. But I called them and I said, I want the whole team to join hands together, pray to cut Anton's silver cord. And Jill, the head intercessor, she said, won't that kill him? And I said, yeah, it will. But if that doesn't happen, it's either him or DJ tonight, because he's already told me he's going to sacrifice her to Satan. So we prayed that. I was, by that time, I was at this staging area, Hell Motel, standing out in the road, praying, you know, Jesus, cut his silver cord. And DJ came busting out the front door, jumped in the car. We headed home, and I said, what happened? She said, Anton bounced. Well, bouncing is a term that's unique to people who astral project. But it's when somebody, something goes wrong, they get in trouble spiritually, or they stay gone too long out of their body, because there is a time limit and the body just begins to atrophy and you can't get back in. But anyway, that's what they call it, when the spirit soul cannot get back in to the body. They call it bouncing, because it's just like, I can't get in. So she said, Anton bounced. The whole coven gathered around and began to try to conjure spirits and get demonic help to somehow get the high priest back in his body. And she said, well, they were all bent over him. And I just jumped up and ran out the room. And when I got to the bottom of the stairs, you were standing in the road. So that was Halloween of 1997, Halloween Eve. And that's when they do the rituals. Remember, it's the first 3 hours of Halloween. So it's Halloween Eve, 1997. That's how we found out that that God had judged Anton LaVey, and the Black Pope died that night. And so now we're there with the prayers in our home. And the first confirmation that happened is a spirit came into Deborah Joy that was really powerful, and the room got cold, and her eyes turned red, and the spirit spoke out of her to me, said, you murderer, you killed the high priest. And I said, who are you? And the spirit said, I'm Leviathan, the power spirit of the high priest. Well, Anton LaVey, you know, Leviathan's called the twisting serpent in scripture. Anton LaVey carried a big snake wrapped around his neck, carried it with him wherever he went. And just like the Harry Potter movie, that snake, it had the appearance of a physical snake, but it actually was a transmogrification of Leviathan, the power spirit, which means it could change shapes into anything else it wanted or become invisible. But anyway, That's the first thing that happened is this spirit rebuked me and said, you are a murderer. You killed the high priest. And I said, why are you in Deborah Joy? And it said, I'm in Ray Ray. I said, no, she's not Ray Ray anymore. She's Deborah Joy. And you have no right of access. Yes, she's an heir of the Black Pope. I said, no, she's renounced that. She's a child of God. We've adopted her. She has nothing to do with the royal family of Satanism. And you can't be here anymore. And, you know, it actually apparently knew that and left and was suddenly gone. And we looked at each other and we said, I guess that's confirmation. We just heard from his power spirit that he's dead. The next thing that happened almost immediately is another spirit came into her from the astral plane. And it was a woman's voice. And it said, I hate you. I hate you. I hate you. You killed my father. And when it said my father, I knew it was either Carla or Zena LaVey. And so I just asked, are you Carla or Zena? And she said, I'm Zena. And I said, well, Zena, you know at this point that we can cut your silver cord. We just did it to your father. He's dead. If you don't get in your body immediately, we'll do it to you. And she said, please don't do that. And she instantly left. And that was in the past 30 years, I've been involved in some pretty bizarre things. But that was about the most bizarre night that I've ever experienced. It was surreal. We looked at each other and we just said, the Black Pope is dead. We've got that from his power spirit and from his daughter. And we'll probably hear it in the news tomorrow, which we did. And of course, they just say that Anton LaVey had a heart attack and yada, yada, yada. But what actually happened is he blasphemed Christ and was judged by God for his blasphemy. And God took his life and spared Deborah Joyce. And so, she's living happily. Her three children both gave their, they all three gave their lives to the Lord. Joey is in prison because of things that he did before his conversion. And her other two daughters, one of them was a Wiccan high priestess. And she died during the COVID crisis. Her youngest daughter, who actually was involved in the Judas ritual, she's serving Jesus. She's married. She has six kids, and they're living together right near her mom and Billy, and serving God. So it's an amazing, tremendous story. And there's, of course, a myriad of details, but that's about the best we can do in a flyby, so to speak.
Well, it is an amazing story, Dave. Thank you for sharing it with us. And, you know, it's an amazing story because obviously Deborah Joy is fine now and serving God. What an amazing God we serve. Just to wrap up, could you just let people know sort of where they can get, like, about your church and also the book you talked about, where they can get that?
Yeah, you can get everything at the same website. It's churchofgladtidings.com. That's Church of Glad Tidings, like Happy News, churchofgladtidings.com. And if you go there, you can go into the store, and there's lots of information on spiritual warfare, deliverance. You can get the book. The book's called The Serpent and the Savior. It's the story that we told here on the air, only in more detail. And lots of Isaiah 61 teaching that has to do with tearing down strongholds, has to do with deliverance and spiritual warfare. But it's all there at churchofgladtidings.com.
Well, bless you, Dave, for your work that you do. Thanks very much for joining me. I'll be back again next week, guys. I'm Paul, and this is Beyond the Paradigm.
Am I crazy? We don't use that word in here.